time, hop on the bus or hop in the car and head on down to the X this weekend. Well, here at home, the debate continues to smolder over plans for those deep underground storage facilities for waste from our nuclear power plants. The betting line, you know, would be that surely one of these plants, one of these underground storage units, I should say, would be located in around the Bruce Nuclear Power Development, perhaps in Saugeen Shores. It makes sense logistically from a nuclear power standpoint. And despite the opposition from many, many people, local politicians seem pretty keen about this, you know. In fact, many communities, believe it or not, have applied to host one of these deep underground repositories because they're buying into the promise of jobs down the road, economic benefits. That's the kind of thing that gets you elected as a politician. So why not? Others, however, are worried about the impact on the environment. What if something goes wrong? This stuff is going to be buried underground and is going to stay there indefinitely. But what if something goes wrong? There are many people taking a dim view of this whole idea. One of them is globally recognized expert on nuclear safety, Dr. Gordon Edwards, who heads up the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. Dr. Edwards, good morning to you and welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for inviting me.
You were in our area just recently. You addressed a public meeting in Saugeen Shores. And I have to tell you that afterwards, organizers were kind of disappointed because they say they didn't get the turnout that they expected. And they were also upset that the big media outlets, the big city media outlets, didn't staff this this very important public meeting. This brings me to this question then. Are most Canadians simply in the dark or don't care or simply don't realize what's at stake here?
Well, I think that's the case. And the Canadian nuclear industry, like all other nuclear industries around the world, have a vested interest in keeping the public in the dark about the nature of the problem, because these wastes are really difficult for most people to comprehend, and the industry does little to dispel the misunderstandings about it. If people can remember the Fukushima accident of last year, the exploding reactors and the melting down cores and so on, you know, that those damages that you saw were not as the result directly of the earthquake or of the tsunami. Those reactors looked fine right after both of the earthquake and the tsunami. It was self-inflicted damage caused by the nuclear waste inside the reactors that caused the explosions and the meltdowns and the subsequent dispersion of radioactive materials over wide areas. These wastes are active. They are radioactive. They are chemically active. They are thermally active. And they consist of hundreds of radioactive materials which are created inside the reactor and which do not exist for the most part in nature. So people really fail to understand the dimensions of this problem.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we seem to be hearing so many different things about exactly what is this material. I mean, we hear labels like it's low-level waste. We hear all kinds of labels attached to it that suggest that this stuff is relatively harmless.
Again, that's a public relations thing. The nuclear industry, see, what happened was that we started the nuclear industry in Canada during World War II, and it was for 30 years, there was no real mention at the public level of the radioactive waste problem. So we were already producing radioactive waste for 30 years before anybody really realized that it was a big problem. Now, this came to a head around 1976, 1977, when there were several studies that were done into the nuclear waste problem from an independent point of view, and they said there has to be a stop to the production of nuclear power unless we can solve this problem, because this is a problem of many hundreds of thousands, even millions of years. The fundamental problem is this. is that we create dangerous materials inside the reactor which cannot be shut off. We cannot shut off radioactivity. And this radioactivity continues not only to generate danger, but to generate heat, to generate chemical reactions for literally hundreds of thousands of years into the future. So, for example, Atomic Energy of Canada Limited has a diagram where they show the rocks underground heating up and cooling down again over a period of 50,000 years as a result of the radioactive waste that will be put down there. So this is the kind of thing that you have to think about, the very, very long term, and with the realization that the human race has never successfully disposed of anything. Nature has always found a way of recycling everything we've tried to dispose of.
That's really interesting. You know, I remember over 30 years ago now, I hate to admit it, that I asked a question at a news conference at the what was then the Douglas Point Nuclear Generating Station. And it was a simple question, I thought. I simply asked, what do you do when this place wears out? What do you do? And, you know, the people conducting the news conference, they got kind of red-faced. They didn't want to answer that.
No, and that Douglas Point plant is still sitting there. It's still a radioactive hulk. The problem is it's going to cost many billions of dollars to dismantle these radioactive structures. And what many people don't realize is that it's not only the radioactive fuel that becomes a danger. That's called the high-level waste. But even the structural materials of the plant itself become radioactive. That's called the intermediate and low-level waste. And so when they dismantle these buildings, when they eventually dismantle Douglas Point, for example, which has been shut down for a long time now, they will end up with thousands of truckloads of radioactive rubble, which is going to have to go somewhere. So this problem is ongoing. Now, the crunch is happening right now because for the last 30 years, there have been no new commitments to build new nuclear reactors anywhere in North America. Just recently, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission gave the go-ahead for preparing a site for two new reactors at Darlington, down near Toronto. Now, the thing is that in 1978, there was a report by the Ontario Royal Commission on Electric Power Planning, which said there should be a moratorium on any new reactors until this waste problem is solved. Well, in fact, they haven't solved the problem. They have no actual solution. They haven't even broken ground. In the United States, they tried 8 times to find a waste repository, and they have failed 8 times. The most recent failure was in Nevada, the Yucca Mountain Project. They spent $10 to $20 billion on that project, and now it is abandoned. And just recently, a couple of weeks ago, a court in the United States said that they shouldn't be licensing any more nuclear reactors in the states because they don't have a solution to the problem. And now the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has agreed and has temporarily, at least, suspended all final licensing approvals of any new nuclear reactors. So we in Canada, I think, are basically being led down the garden path. We haven't even broken ground on trying to find a waste repository, and we're acting as if the problem is solved when, in fact, there is no solution.
Joining our conversation, our guest is Dr. Gordon Edwards, president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. We're talking about those very controversial deep underground repositories for nuclear energy waste. If you have any comments or thoughts on that one this morning, 357-1280. If you're calling long distance, 1-800-668-2569 on the toll-free line. I guess what's so mind-boggling here, then, it sounds as though we had an industry that has continued to grow over the years, but that back when they started this whole thing, as you point out then, Dr. Edwards, they knew they were going to have this long-standing issue with waste. They knew that the waste was going to be there. They simply turn a blind eye to it and say, we'll worry about it later.
Yeah, in a way, that's right. They say, well, somebody will take out the garbage. Somebody will deal with the garbage later. We're excited about building new reactors, about getting electricity, about selling reactors overseas, about expanding this industry. This is where the exciting challenges are. And that's where all the energy went. That's where all the imagination and powerful potential went. They, at that time, I remember debating some of these nuclear guys back in the early 70s. And whenever the nuclear waste problem came up, they said, oh, that's not a technical problem. That's just a public relations problem. Ha! Some public relations problem. The fact is that they're now estimating it's going to cost something upwards of $26 billion to dispose of this public relations problem. Well, unfortunately, I believe that this is really a fundamental flaw. For them to regard it as a public relations problem means that they are in a conflict of interest, and they are the ones who are running the Nuclear Waste Management Organization. The very guys who are producing the nuclear waste, they're the ones who are running the Nuclear Waste Management Organization.
So the political process around this decision-making is completely skewed in favor of big power.
Well, in favor of the polluters, that's right.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is that we did have a 10-year environmental assessment project. It was called the Seaborne Commission, which looked into this whole question of underground waste repositories and so on. And they came to a unanimous conclusion that there should be a waste management organization in Canada which is completely independent of the nuclear industry. And instead, we have a nuclear waste management organization which is totally owned by the nuclear industry. So it's not really a good setup for good decision making, and also there's no real realization that there is a kind of a hidden agenda here too, because as was pointed out by the same Royal Commission report in 1978, that the only real positive thing for the nuclear industry's point of view of getting all the waste together in one location is so that they can do something called reprocessing. Reprocessing means that instead of burying the waste as a solid, which it is a solid waste, instead of burying it as a solid, you want to dissolve it in acid to turn it into a liquid high-level radioactive waste so that you can separate out the substance called plutonium. And the reason for that is because the plutonium can then be used as further fuel for more nuclear reactors. And this is ultimately what the nuclear industry around the world would like to see happen. They would like to see this plutonium, but nobody really talks about that when discussing with town councillors or local communities. This agenda is kept in the distant background.
So I hear you saying then that the plan would be to keep fiddling and faddling around with this dangerous material, reprocessing it, repackaging it, and I take it also shipping it then to other jurisdictions around the world ultimately.
Or vice versa, possibly not only shipping the plutonium to other jurisdictions, but also possibly importing waste from other countries. For example, we sold reactors to countries like Argentina, South Korea, Romania, China. Are we going to take back the waste from these countries? Is that the ultimate objective?
So we don't know what kind of deals are being made under the table here.
Precisely. And I think that people are being led by the nose, particularly the town councillors, who are being told only what the industry wants them to hear. And this is indicated by the lack of any decent public education program. Now, years ago, your listeners may remember the problem with nuclear waste in Port Hope. They've got 800,000 tons of radioactive waste in Port Hope, which they've been trying to dispose of for decades. And they set up an organization to look for a willing host community, very similar to what's going on with the Deep Geological Repository. And they went all over Ontario looking for a willing host community. And after 3 years of effort, they ended up coming up empty-handed. But one thing they did do is each community was given fundings to educate themselves in any way they saw fit as to what radioactivity is, what the radioactive wastes are, what are the dangers, what are the environmental challenges. And they were not sort of, it was a very different process from what's going on now. What's going on now is the town councillors are being taken in secrecy, in privacy, and wined and dined and sort of educated, quote-unquote, by the NWMO, who are the very people who caused the problem in the first place.
We'll continue with our guest as we talk about the controversy around those deep underground nuclear waste repositories. And we'll take phone calls for our guest, Dr. Gordon Edwards, after this. All right, we have a beautiful weekend shaping up. Sunny skies today, a high of 27. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 17. And tomorrow, a mix of sun and cloud. There is a chance of a few showers or thunderstorms being triggered later in the day tomorrow. Still warm, though, high of 28. For your Saturday, partly to mostly sunny again at a high of 25. It's 20 degrees at the talk show. All right. right, lots to talk about around these deep underground nuclear waste repositories. How potentially hazardous are these? Our guest this morning, Dr. Gordon Edwards, has been quoted as saying, "If we lived, if the Egyptian pyramids were nuclear waste repositories, we would all be dead." Let's go to a call. David, good morning. You're on the air.
Listen, I just wanted to clarify a few things that the Dr. Gordon has said. I should point out that I am on a member of council for South Bruce. That is one of the areas being cited for this repository. So I've gone through a number of the seminars with NWMO as well as with the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, which is, I wanted to point out, they are an arm's length body authority that oversees this whole selection process. I mean, NWMO is a group of the industries that must find a method or way of disposing of nuclear waste, but they answer to the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, which does not answer to any political minister. And I was a week ago up in Ottawa for 4 hours, and if anything they put across to our council was that they have the authority over the final decision on this through environmental assessments, public hearings, and the whole whatever it takes to find a willing community in the process. But they are arm's length away from any political bodies.
Okay, Dr. Edwards, respond to that, if you will.
The previous president of the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission was fired from her job for doing her job too assiduously, for actually trying to apply the rules for a nuclear reactor. That was at Chalk River. The CNSC recently, last week, was reported as having overlooked for 18 years the emissions of tritium from a facility in Peterborough. We have found the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission to be part and parcel of the nuclear establishment. They are very promotional of the nuclear industry. They're like the coach rather than the referee of the nuclear people. They never penalize anybody. They never fine anybody. They never suspend a license. They never send anybody to the penalty box. They never press charges. They are a lapdog, not a watchdog. Okay. And
in principle, by legislation, they are supposed to be separate.
They are not separate because they have been already interfered with by the Prime Minister himself, and they have been basically given clear instructions that they are not to interfere with the licensing of nuclear facilities.
Okay. Well, the National Energy Board used to be separate as well, but then they changed the rules to do a number of things for the oil companies. So I'm suspicious of this as well.
Miss this point and stay with us. What I heard you just say a moment ago, Dr. Edwards, Prime Minister of Canada has told this body, don't interfere with nuclear energy in effect.
No, not in so many words, but by firing Linda Keane, this was a very famous incident when they even had an all-night special session at midnight. What Linda Keane did was, she was a very good chairman of the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission. She tried to prevent this nuclear reactor from operating for a few weeks in Chalk River, simply because it did not have earthquake protection and it did not have a backup electrical supply system that was earthquake-proof. Those are the very same things that caused the Fukushima accident, the lack of earthquake protection and the lack of electrical supply. So she should have been lauded and rewarded for what she was doing. Instead, she was fired and denigrated for having interfered with the licensing of this reactor.
Interesting.
They also provided the licensing for the shipment of steamers on those generators on the Great Lakes.
That's correct.
It was based on science, and that's what they're saying. This will be based on science as well. My concern is they're not taking in public perception of anything going on the Great Lakes or any repository being located within the Great Lakes Basin.
How curious is it that Bruce Power was the one who put the brakes on it, and we haven't seen those? To my knowledge, really nothing has been done with those spent generators.
Well, they're looking at an option for rail transport
to the United States, and we're going to be talking, hopefully, with that company that's proposing that very thing. Mm. Yeah. David, good to hear from you. Thanks for your call this morning.
Okay.
All the best. It's
interesting to look at the independent commissions outside of the nuclear establishment, including the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, which is officially under the Minister of Natural Resources, the same minister that promotes nuclear power and promotes nuclear exports. You know, we have a situation in Canada where just as asbestos, for example, is our government refuses to label asbestos as a dangerous product. Why? Because Quebec mines asbestos. And so Canada continues to export this dangerous material around the world and doesn't even want to have it declared dangerous. In a similar way, our government has spent a huge amount of taxpayers' money in supporting the nuclear industry. They created the nuclear industry in Canada. Now, when you look at other jurisdictions that have examined this question, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll tell you what we're going to do, Doctor. If you hold that thought, we're going to take a break.
I just want to tell you about two other provinces which have looked at this problem.
Well, we'll take a break for a 90-second news update. We'll come back with Dr. Gordon Edwards, and we'll take more of your calls right after this.
Brian Allen.
Dr. Gordon Edwards, president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, is with us this morning as we look at the controversy around those proposed deep underground repositories for nuclear energy waste. Just before we took a break, Dr. Edwards, you were trying to make a point. Please go ahead.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to say that I sympathize with the commissions who are being approached by the NWMO because it certainly sounds impressive. The nuclear industry does a very good job of putting their best foot forward. And it sounds very good when they put it forward. But they do this in secrecy, and that's not good. It should be done as part of a public, open, transparent process so that people can witness, people can question, and other points of view can be brought forward right away. Instead, they allow them to sort of build their case without any opposition at all, without any consideration of other things. Now, in Manitoba, they actually had 15 years of research. They did actually break ground on what's called an underground research laboratory. They went down 500 meters into hard granite rock, and they studied very much the possibility of putting radioactive waste down there. But the more that the Manitoba government learned about this, the more they became very concerned, increasingly concerned about the possibility that they might end up with the waste. So they ended up passing a law, and that law says that it is illegal to bring nuclear waste into the province for the purpose of disposal. So they are the ones who know more about nuclear waste than any other province in Canada, and they have nixed it. Here in Quebec, we had a similar situation, but it was from the states. The U.S. Department of Energy wanted to locate a nuclear waste repository, an underground nuclear waste repository, in Vermont, just south of the border of Quebec. And our Quebec government became so involved in this. Jean Charest was at that time the MP from Sherbrooke, and he got a diplomatic note delivered to the Americans saying that Canada would regard it as an unfriendly act to put this nuclear waste right on the border of Canada. The whole province of Quebec got involved in this, and just recently, within the last 2 years, the National Assembly of Quebec, which hardly ever agrees unanimously on anything, unanimously passed a resolution saying they would never support a radioactive waste repository in Quebec or on its borders. So I think that you have to look at people, other provinces, which have not depended just on the NWMO, just on the nuclear establishment, just on the CNSC, but look at other provinces that have done their homework and ask yourself, what about Ontario? Now, there was, as I said, there was only one independent inquiry into this that I'm aware of, and that's the 1978 Royal Commission on Electric Power Planning. And if you read that report, you will get an independent perspective on this, quite independent of the nuclear industry, and also not at all supportive of the point of view of the CNSC. And they said that there should be a moratorium on new reactors until this problem is really solved, and they thought it should be solved by 1985 originally.
Let me take a caller. Barry, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Brian. About 20 years ago, I met this truck driver from Calgary that was hauling two trailers, full-length trailers. They were dump trailers, and he was hauling some kind of radioactive whatever. He didn't even know what he was hauling. And I talked to him. Somebody brought the two trailers to Calgary. He picked them up and brought them right across northern Ontario, right down through to Sarnia. And he was told what highways to travel on, and if you have a problem, you phone. you do not go off the highway that we tell you to drive on. And when he got down to Sarnia, he said, here's two men coming out of this building. He said they were all dressed up like space people. He said, and there I am with my T-shirt. It was in the summertime. He said, my T-shirt, and I'm doing this and doing that with my truck. And, like, why can't whatever they're trying to put down in the Bruce place, why can't it be delivered down to Sarnia if they got a proper place there? Like, this was 20 years ago that they were bringing this down from the West.
Yeah, I don't have any answer for that. I wasn't aware. I'm not aware of that. From what we know, there's no place in Sarnia can handle this kind of waste, Dr. Edwards.
No, as a matter of fact, in Sarnia, they tried to get rid of some of their chemical waste by injecting them into deep wells. Some people may remember this. And they ended up, decades later, coming up as toxic blobs in the St. Clair River. They had these green toxic blobs coming up in the sediment of the St. Clair River. So our experience with trying to dispose of toxic materials has not been very good. The question really is, and this is another thing that's hard to wrap your mind around, but this radioactive waste is so hot when it's produced, even after the reactor is completely shut down, it continues to generate so much heat that you have to cool it with circulating water in deep pools for at least 7 to 10 years. And even after it comes out of those pools, according to the Nuclear Waste Management Organization, you can't really take it away for burial for about 30 years. So this means that no matter how quickly you bury this waste underground, even if you were able to bury it instantaneously like a magic, you would still have the same problem at the site of the reactors, because the first 10 to 30 years worth of radioactive fuel is still going to be sitting there and still constituting a catastrophic potential. So you haven't really solved the problem at all.
Barry, thanks for your call this morning. Dr. Edwards, we heard a report the other day saying that it seems that there's a plan, at least in governments are looking at this and saying that, you know, well, after 50 years or so, we won't even bother monitoring these sites. I mean, we'll just forget about them.
That's my biggest concern. They're really, NWMO is saying 300 years, but ultimately the purpose of putting it underground is to get it out of sight and out of mind. Ultimately the purpose is to abandon it, and this is where the real concern should be. Because many people believe that this waste is far too dangerous to abandon, and to do so would be irresponsible to future generations. Because underground, things do happen, and if this stuff starts leaking into surface waters and so on later, by the time the contamination is detected off-site, it's going to be far too late to take any corrective action. The damage will already be done.
And if there's a leak, what do we do then? Do we try to take this stuff out? And then what are we looking at? Then we're looking at other jurisdictions saying, do you want this stuff? No, I don't want it. Let's play hot potato with it.
Well, that's correct. And if you look at, again, that 1978 Ontario Royal Commission report, they look at the toxicity of the spent fuel for 10 million years. And they point out that it's still significantly toxic even after 10 million years. So why put it right beside the Great Lakes? It doesn't make any sense. In fact, if you look at all the early reports, one of the most constant themes in these reports is to keep it away from water, keep it away from water, because water is the vehicle that might most easily disseminate this stuff. Now, I just recently heard on the radio, CBC, I was surprised to hear this, that the Niagara River is only about 25,000 years old. It was created about 25,000 years ago. Well, 25,000 years is nothing. 25,000 years is a drop in the bucket. Even though it's five times the age of the Egyptian pyramids, this stuff is going to remain toxic for far longer than that. So why would you put it within a mile or two of Lake Huron, considering the fact that the Great Lakes provide drinking water for about 40 million people?
And we'll have to leave it there. A great question. Dr. Gordon Edwards, President of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. I hope we'll talk again on this, Dr. Edwards.
Yes, okay. Very good. I hope so, too.
Good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.